Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I had somebody ask me recently, I think on Twitter or email, I'm not even sure if I responded. Hey, Mark, you don't take calls very much anymore. Why don't you take calls? And I don't know that I've really ever addressed that very much, but I'll just be honest with you. One of the reasons that I don't take calls as much as I used to is because there are, how do I put this nice in a kind way? There are too many crazy people who call, okay? And unfortunately, I'm not trying to insult anyone on the line right now, but what happens is that people bring things up, and this this often happens on the race issues, which is one of the reasons I avoid going to the phones on the race issues, because people say things that are so vile and vulgar and ridiculous, I lose my you-know-what, and then, you know, I start yelling at someone. I used to yell at people a lot. Dave, didn't I yell at a lot of people back in the day? Don't you miss those days? But it's a calmer, gentler Mark Rudin.
I'd say that's we'll almost see. Fair.
What, the part that I'm kinder and gentler?
That's right.
The part that I used to get, okay. Okay, well, we'll see. Let's find out. Because I haven't really talked to people about the election or the allegations of the vote fraud and all this other stuff that's come up and the Antifa nonsense. So let's do that for a few minutes this afternoon. Are we ready? 436-7900. Mary, you're first up on KMOX. Good afternoon.
Well, hi, Mark, and thanks for letting me ask the question. I'm one of the people at normal people in the community. I'm well educated, and I do have some concern about election integrity. I don't know, you know, voter fraud was not proven, as you say over and over again, but there were some issues that I'm concerned about, issues about ballot harvesting. How about obstructing poll workers from really observing what's going on? And that was seen, I saw that with my own eyes in real time on television. How about irregularities with mail-in voting? Those can't be proven.
So they can't be proven, but let's kind of break those down. Where's the ballot harvesting going on?
Well, I think that isn't ballot harvesting legal in states like California? You know, I'm not an expert in that arena, but there has been talk about ballot harvesting. Didn't it occur in Georgia, or is that a false thing?
Ballot harvesting, what ballot harvesting is it's collecting absentee ballots that are already filled out and then, you know, submitting them. In Georgia, they did an audit of all the votes that were cast, and they matched it up with the paper ballot, and there was none of this stuff. And all these allegations, see, this is the problem. There's allegations. And I'm not going to tell you that there weren't issues of fraud. Was there some ballot harvesting? We should look into that. We should absolutely look into this. But most of what's said, and even your allegation that you saw this in real time on television, you don't know that, because I saw clips that were not in real time that people claimed showed one thing, and when I looked into it, and I just did a little bit of digging, it didn't show me that at all. So I get concerned, because I think what's happening is people think they saw something. They hear, it's weird, because let's say that the president of the United States started just going off on the rails and telling people a bunch of stuff that's not true. Imagine that, just for a moment, for argument's sake. And then he says it for a couple of months, and United States senators start saying it, and, you know, people who are unhinged in the media start saying it. Well, people start believing it, even though it's not true. And I looked at almost all of these allegations, and I looked hard at the big allegations, like the suitcases and all that. There was nothing. And, You don't have to believe me. You can believe every federal judge that took a look at these things across the country. So shouldn't we have at least, when I say we, shouldn't the president and his team at least laid down a bunt, like just maybe a little bunt down the first baseline that might have gotten a judge to say, aha, there is something here. But that never happened because there was no wide-scale fraud. Mary's right, though. We need to convince people that these elections are free and fair. And I don't know how we do that. I really don't. John, you're on KMOX.
Hey, how you doing? You know, there was a time when KMOX was known as the voice of St. Louis. 50,000 watts, clear channel. CBS owned and operated. Now, you have some bloviating buffoon, boorish buffoon, I might add, from 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock every day, spewing these ridiculous conspiracy theories, propagating this lie, and it continues. And if the big Rush isn't there, one of his co-hosts, who basically lick his boots for 3 hours, they do the very same thing. How do you guys continue on with him? Apparently it makes a lot of money for the station. That's the only thing I can figure out.
Well, I will say this. Those are questions that aren't for me. And I've had some of the same concerns. I'll just leave it at that because I'll leave it at that. Let's just say that. It's a valid complaint. Tom, you're on KMOX.
Hey, Mark. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to say off on the person that was your last guest, very good interview. But the one thing that he said that's a real pet peeve of mine, for instance, I voted for Hillary Clinton last time, not necessarily proud to say it. But as soon as Trump won, I hope that he succeeded as a president. He said that he hopes that after a short amount of time that, and I'm paraphrasing, but something like 30% of the people that voted for Biden will see what a sham it is so that the Republican Party can gain those votes. I, on the other hand, I hope that 100% of the people that vote next time vote Democrat across the board, not because I'm a Democrat. I actually voted for Trump this time. But the reason is because if 100% of the people vote for the power that's already in, that means everything's going great and the country's doing good. Isn't that more important than being right in your views and saying, I told you so? Isn't it better that we're all doing good?
Well, I mean, I understand your point philosophically, but you're not going to get a situation where everyone is going to sing kumbaya in this country. What John's addressing, and look, he's a flamethrower. I love him, but I get his point. What he's saying is the reason that you, I'm guessing, I don't know, Tim, why did you vote for Donald Trump? I'm guessing just you're not a, you know, you voted for Hillary Clinton. This time you voted for Trump. You're not a white supremacist KKK member, are you?
No, hardly. So, I'll be above board. The reason I voted for Hillary and the reason I usually vote for Democrats is because I'm very pro-choice. Okay, so now once the Supreme Court with Ginsburg passing on, that is really out the window now. So then I had to look at what is better for the country, and I was so afraid of this heavy-duty left-wing agenda that's out there.
Okay, right. See, but you've answered your own question here. That's what John was saying. That's what he said. Because, look, there's going to be a lurch to the left. And unfortunately, this is one of the problems. I'm going to get to this probably next week and beyond. We'll talk about this for months now. Because what the insurrectionists have done is they have given Joe Biden a gift to lurch to the left even further with cabinet picks, with policy. Because now the other side has a bit of a negotiating strength point because of the wackiness. And this is why I've defended, you know, I've spent years, even though I have not been the biggest fan of Trump personally, defending the people who have supported him. Because it took me a while, but not unlike Selena Zito, who wrote The Great Revolt, she's going to be with me on Monday, to understand why there was this groundswell of people in this country. And right now, and this is sad, it's being written off by the CNNs and the other mainstream media folks, a bunch of racist redneck idiots. See, we told you the whole time, this is who they were. And unfortunately, for the people who aren't like that, the overwhelming number of people in this country who voted for President Trump, they get tagged with that. And the left can do it right now. And by the way, how can you blame them? You've given them a big, slow, fat pitch right down the middle. We would do it too. Can you even imagine the dynamics on the other side and how harsh the left would be getting ripped into by the Rush Limbaughs of the world? Sometimes I don't think people think through that, but I appreciate the call this afternoon. Tom, you're on Camo X. Another Tom, I think.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, thanks for having me on. You know, Mark, I voted for Trump twice. You know, people ask me, and I have a lot of friends that are Democrats, just diehard Democrats, and ask why. And it was basically because of the policies. You know, I like the idea that he reduced the corporate tax rate and brought more of those dollars here. So there's a lot of reasons. I just ignored the rhetoric, kind of the way he talked out in public and things. It's always kind of, you know, put me at not, I wasn't at ease with a lot of his comments.
I think a lot of people should, right.
Yeah, I do believe he should be impeached. I do believe that there's consequences for your actions. I think his, you know, when people like this, whether it's President Trump, Madonna, or whoever, you know, when they have a public that, where they can say things and people will believe it or take it to heart, you know, the more powerful you are, the more popular you are, these movie stars, people like that, the things they say can hurt people. And I the other thing I'd like to comment about is that I just wish the media, you know, if Trump has said, hey, there was ballot harvesting, there was, you know, there was people putting in ballots in Michigan that were dead. There's people that didn't sign absentee ballots. I truly believe there needs to be uniformity from state to state on how we handle the elections. And why hasn't the media come out and said, hey, this Trump said this, but this didn't happen? What the media has kind of done is they've just ignored it. They haven't come out and proven it.
That is part of the problem. No, you're right about that. And that's part of the problem, because what happened, this is built over the years, and it's sad because you don't have – I'm going to give you an example. I've been spending – and this is tough to do, so maybe this is why the media hasn't done this. But I'm expecting that Senator Hawley is going to come on the show hopefully soon, and I have some very important questions to ask him about his participation in this, in the lawsuits, and in Pennsylvania in particular. So let me ask this. You're not the best person to ask this to, but I was hoping that someone would jump on here and think that the election was stolen. Because the narratives, this is something else the media hasn't really done a very good job of. There's two narratives. The election was stolen. There were millions, I guess there were millions of votes that were fraudulent, right? Well, were they faked votes? Was someone rigging the machines? Were they filling out the ballots? Were they ballot harvesting? Or, as Senator Hawley and the Republicans in Jeff City and elsewhere have said, was it simply constitutional issues on the part of Pennsylvania where they did not, you know, they made changes unconstitutionally? Well, that's two different things, right? Because, and this is my point, I made this point yesterday, you have some people claiming without any evidence whatsoever that millions of votes were stolen. And how did that happen? And then you have the legal cases, which don't claim that at all. And they don't claim that at all because they know that's not the case. Eric Schmidt knew that wasn't the case. Josh Hawley knew that wasn't the case. Rudy Giuliani knows. They all know that wasn't the case. What do they have? Not unlike the death row attorney trying to get the client off a death row before the needle or the, you know, the electric chair or the bullet goes in their head as they used to do. It's not because they're not innocent. It's not. It's because it's procedural. So then they go in and they say, oh, wait a second. There was this thing that was passed in Pennsylvania called Act 77, which, by the way, was passed in November of 2019, a year and 3 months ago, that talked about mail-in balloting. Josh Hawley didn't file a suit a year ago. Rudy Giuliani didn't file a suit. They knew. They knew what was going on in Pennsylvania. They didn't file a suit until they lost. Right? All these things. No one ever discusses all those things.
The media's done a poor job. Mark, you're really good at seeing both sides of the Democratic side and Republican side. But my thing is, the media hasn't put this out there. You know, and let me just also end with this, is that they want to blame Trump and everything for what happened at the Capitol. And he does have blame, okay? But let's also don't dismiss that the Democrats, for long periods of time, we have been ignoring what's happening in Portland, what's happening in Minnesota, what's happening in Chicago. Black Lives Matter was formed on a completely false premise. I actually grew up in Ferguson, Missouri. So, you know, I know what happened there. There was never hands up, don't shoot. It just never happened.
Look, Tom, I've spent 6 years debunking that. And yeah, it's a false narrative, but I'm not into whataboutism right now because I'm about what happened last week and what's happening right now. I spent months talking about all that other stuff. I'm talking about this right now. And we're going to talk about the St. Louis County Council. Mark Carter, coming up next.
The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
St. Louis County Councilman Mark Carter is with me this afternoon. A little follow-up to what's going on with the county council. Who's in charge? Where is this all heading? We had Councilman Fitch on yesterday. Big disputes because the council went ahead with leadership votes last week with a member who was voted out in November, and they tried to do another one this past Tuesday night. And Lisa Clancy, the county chair, didn't like it very much, shut the meeting down. Where does that leave us right now? Councilman Mark Carter with me on this Thursday afternoon. Mark, how are you? Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year, Mark. Good to be on.
You guys certainly keep things lively during these county council meetings. I'll give you that, right?
Yeah, we do. It's becoming the must-watch Zoom meeting of the week.
So I don't know that I'm any closer to determining how this wraps up and who determines who the council chair is. So where does this head from here, Mark? How do we figure this out? And who figures it out?
Well, unfortunately, we had to end abruptly the other night. So we are going to, and I'm announcing it here on your show, is that per our council rules, any four council members can come together and have a meeting and be an official meeting of the county council. So we have petitioned the clerk as of today to set up a meeting, a continuation of the meeting from the other night, that will handle the only thing on the agenda will be the election of a council chair and council vice chair. And that will be on Friday at 4:30, and it will be a Zoom meeting just like our normal meetings are right now. So the idea is we will pick up where we left off when it comes to the election and get that issue resolved so that we can move forward next Tuesday night.
So I'm on the process here of doing that, and you know, you send the Zoom link out. That's how I get informed about meetings. There's really no guarantee that the other members of the council who aren't happy with the way that this went down, Lisa Clancy and Councilman Trakas and others, will sign on to that meeting, or do they have to? Is there a requirement?
No, there's no requirement. Four council people can have a meeting of the council. We have the four. We welcome them. We want them to join us if they choose to. They are invited, as they would be to any meeting that we would have and any meeting that anyone would call. So it will be a regular meeting with minutes and journal and so on. And we will get some of these issues resolved and move on.
Well, I'm going to believe you. I'm not challenging you on what you're saying, but based on the way that this ended with the former chair, or who knows which is, Lisa Clancy, not even acknowledging that this is possible, and Sam Page doing the same thing, it seems like both sides are sort of divided on what the solution is right now.
Well, we're going by Robert's Rules of Order. We're also going by state statutes, and we feel that our side is right here, that the 4th District was deprived of representation in the election of the leadership. And this problem could have been corrected very easily. And I brought it to the council's attention back in December that all they had to do is cancel that first meeting of January. And we could have had our first meeting of the year last week. And that would have solved the problem for this year. And then we could go back in and change the charter and clean up the conflict. But the council chairwoman Clancy decided that she didn't want to do it that way. And I think they saw some political maneuvering being done out of this. And so we had to try to go back in and change things. And that's what we tried to do last Tuesday night.
Yeah, but usually, and look, Mark, I said this to Tim, and when you look at the facts of this, I just don't know why it's so difficult to not come down on your side, Councilman Fitch's side, Rita Days and Shalonda Webb, because it seems obvious that this is, you know, how this election should happen for leadership after the new member is sworn in. But the other thing that's really interesting here is it's very unusual. I mean, I don't even know if you've encountered this before, where there is not a clear path of resolution for something like this. Because you're telling me this, I'm guessing if I got Lisa Clancy on the phone or someone else, she would say something completely different as they did the other night. So let's say that this meeting takes place, you guys try to move forward, they don't acknowledge it. Do lawyers have to get involved here eventually?
Possible. You know, we're trying to avoid that, and that's why we're doing this by protocol and by the rules that are out there, and in conjunction with state rules as well as our charter. And this is the path forward we see that is the most gives everybody representation. Everybody can vote on and Clancy can nominate and get nominated for our council chair. It's an open vote, and we'll get this resolved. I was talking to some municipal officials and dealing with this, and they just can't believe that this is even going on, because they would never allowed a outgoing council person vote for the leadership of the incoming class of the next area in any municipality in our area, or even in the state for that matter. You would never have people that are on that have got defeated to vote for new leadership coming on to the next session. So this is unprecedented in many places, and we hope that any judge out there, if it has to go that far, will see that this is a will of the people, and the people elected Ms. Webb to represent them in the 4th District, and part of that representation is for her to be able to cast a vote for chair and vice chair of our council for the next year. And that's what
Nancy Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi's elected in leadership. She's elected by current members of Congress. Mike Madigan gets the boot in Illinois, and there's a new speaker in Illinois voted on by the current members of Congress. So, yeah, this is one of those things that is confusing. Can I ask you a question? Not that I really care what they say, but I brought this up yesterday. Maybe I've missed it. Has our local newspaper editorial board weighed in on this one? They seem suspiciously quiet, Mark. Maybe I'm just imagining that.
No, I think if you go back to a week ago, they did, and they came down on our side, and they talked about the representation and how this is a flawed process, the way this was handled, to have somebody, an outgoing person, vote for the new incoming group, and that the people of the 4th District were not represented by that person because she was defeated in the election, and the new person should make that decision going forward. Either way, well, I don't know how Shalonda is going to vote. I think I know where she's going to go, but this has been an issue of proper representation on our council, and we want to make sure that every voice is heard.
County Councilman Mark Carter, keep us posted. We'll see what happens. Appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thank you.
Seems so easy to fix. It's one of those, I just think through things, and I know a lot of you do as well. How hard is this one? The person who was booted out of office shouldn't have been voting for Lisa Clancy. Case closed. But I'm going to love to see how this thing kind of plays itself out. 3:30 at KMOX. I want to talk about this last week a little bit. Get off politics. Lindsey Buckingham, one of the members of Fleetwood Mac, not a founding member, of course, but then he got booted by Stevie a couple years ago again. This happens from time to time. Well, he's selling his song rights to all his publishing with Fleetwood Mac. What's that all about? Tim Sumner, music journalist, good friend of the show. Coming up next after the news on KMOX.
Monday morning, you show the fight.
Oh man, I love Lindsey Buckingham, Fleetwood Mac. I like a lot of Fleetwood Mac, but I really do like Lindsey Buckingham, Fleetwood Mac. And I saw this story last week before the insurrection on Wednesday. We were going to have a chat with Tim Sumner, mainly because one of the New Year's resolution was to get off of politics as much as possible. Because I saw a story in Rolling Stone that Lindsey Buckingham has sold his publishing rights, including all those Fleetwood Mac hits. And I thought it was kind of interesting, and I didn't really understand it all because I'm not very smart. So Tim is with me this afternoon to shed some light on this. Happy New Year, Tim Sumner, good friend of the program, music journalist, former record exec, and contributor to the Rock and Roll Globe website. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing great, and Happy New Year to you, and it is truly always a pleasure.
I have to tell you one funny story. I mentioned this yesterday. So on Monday, I have set up an interview, and you can make fun of me because everyone else has. I've set up an interview with Frank Stallone. That would be Sly's brother, because there's a documentary that starts on Tuesday about Frank Stallone, and it's basically called Stallone Frank, the other one. And when I took it kind of on a flyer, all right? I'm just going to tell you, but I watched the movie. I watched the movie, and it was pretty interesting. But the response I'm getting from most people is, what, Screech from Saved by the Bell wasn't available, or maybe Oliver from the Brady Bunch. But here's what I remembered. Now, with your record industry background, in 1983, Frank Stallone released a solo record that featured Far From Over, which was on the Stayin' Alive soundtrack. And I happened to be doing a little bit of work at that time for Polygram Records. And I knew, so I set the interview up. I'm sitting in my room. I got all my records in here. I thought, I know I have this damn Frank Stallone record. I bet I've never put it on, you know, one time. But I searched. It took me about 45 minutes, and I found the epic, legendary Frank Stallone record, which has, again, probably never even been on a turntable. So I had to share that story. It's a little vinyl story for you there,
too. I think also you are the first person in the 21st century to mention the film Staying Alive.
Probably, right? Well,
most people don't even realize that film, that there's a sequel to Saturday Night Fever, much less the disastrous Stayin' Alive. So there you go.
And I think most people don't realize, and this is what was kind of interesting about the documentary, is that, you know, the Bee Gees basically said peace out. You know, they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. They were in at first, and they're like, no, I don't think so. So Frank Stallone steps in, and he even got a Golden Globe nomination for Far From Over, which is... Yeah, anyway. All right, that was just a little note aside there. So on the Lindsey Buckingham stuff, I hate it when these rock bands, first of all, when they split up and they can't get back together. And I don't know if Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks will ever kiss and make up and we'll ever see that incarnation of Fleetwood Mac again. But on the publishing deal here, explain this. What's going on, and how common is this with songwriters?
It's getting more and more common, and there are a couple of reasons for it. A prime reason is that rock stars are finally admitting that one day they may die. They're finally admitting the laws of impermanence. Now, let's talk about Lindsey Buckingham specifically, but this could apply to any of the other rock stars who are selling off 100% of their publishing. Lindsey Buckingham, his publishing probably made him $2 to $5 million a year. Could be a little less, could be a little more. My guess is that it made him somewhere between $2 and $5 million a year. He's 71. Lindsey is 71. Yeah. Arguably, that means he'll be alive for another 10 or 15 years, 20 at most. If Lindsey lives to be 85, that means that for the rest of his life, he is likely to earn between $15 and $75 million, 15 on the low end, $75 million on the high end, for his publishing. So someone comes along and says, hey, Lindsey, we'll buy 100% of your publishing. They're not disclosing the amount of the Lindsey publishing buyout, but my very educated guess, and I think this is a very good guess, I'll tell you that up front, my very good guess is that he probably sold for somewhere between $125 and $150 million. That's my guess. By the way, here's how I arrive at that number. The same company that bought Lindsey's publishing, 100% of Lindsey's publishing, gave Stevie Nicks $80 million for 80% of hers. So Lindsey's publishing is probably worth at least twice what Stevie Nicks is. So if Lindsey is selling 100% of his publishing, it's probably worth twice of what 80% of Stevie's was. That's how I got the 125, 150 million figure. But
those are probably good estimates. But explain to people then, Tim, why, you know, how are they generating that revenue? Like in the case of Fleetwood Mac and these epic songs, they're being used in commercials, they're being used in movies, they're being used in television shows. Is that how the revenue is being generated? It's not by people buying records and CDs anymore.
No,
so it's these business deals, right?
Next time you watch any movie or even any TV show, anytime a car goes by and there's a song on the radio, ding, 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 the cash register rings for the artist, for the publisher.
Yeah.
Anytime that song gets played on the radio, to terrestrial radio, whatever the opposite of terrestrial radio is for some reason, that satellite radio, ding, ding,
right.
ding, more cash registers. Now, is it pennies? Is it fraction of pennies? Yes. But those fractions of pennies add up. They add up to immense amounts. Plus, someone comes along and says, hey, we want to use your song in our Toyota ad. That's not pennies. Now we're talking hundreds and hundreds of thousands and millions. Plus, the artist gets paid every time that commercial airs. So going back to just doing the math, let's say Lindsay got $125 million for his publishing. Now, $125 million, and that's the low end, I think, $125 million is a hell of a lot more than the $20 to $75 million that Lindsay will make off of his publishing for the rest of his life if he doesn't sell. So very, very easy way for everyone out there to think of this. Think of it as a reverse mortgage, but a reverse mortgage where somebody comes knocking on your door and says, hey, I know your house is worth $300,000, but I'll pay you $500,000 for it. So this is really a no-brainer for an artist. However, and this is a big however, the artist now loses any control of how their music is going to be used. So if Happy Day Cottage Cheese comes along and goes, hey, we want to use a song yours, Lindsay, but we want to change it to Go Your Own Way, W-H-E-Y. Lindsay can't say a thing. If Holiday Inn come along and says, hey, we want to make Holiday Home, remember that great song from the Chevy Chase?
Vacation movie, yeah. Right.
We want to use Holiday Home as the theme song.
Holiday Road.
Yeah. Is the theme song for all of the Holiday Inn commercials. Lindsay can't do a thing. More importantly, let's say Lindsay's a vegetarian. I don't know if he is, but let's pretend he is for the sake of this argument. If Lindsay's a vegetarian and the Korean Dog Meat Association comes along and says, hey, Lindsay, we want to use one of our songs for our campaign, Lindsay can't do a thing. You lose 100% of the control over your music. However, you do get paid a premium for it. As I said, they're overpaying, and the artist is going to make more off of the sale than they will off of the life of their deal. Now, if the artist was 25, 30, 35, 40, could be a different story. But since these deals are going to people that are in their 70s and 80s, that then becomes a no-brainer, provided you don't mind losing control over the use of your music.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow. And, you know, for him, I don't know how much this would have had to play into it, but obviously he is not going to have I would assume he's got a lot of money, but he's not going to have the touring revenue that he would have had from the last couple of years. Well, certainly he didn't have it because of the pandemic, but, you know, they go out with Mike Campbell and Crowded House Guy, and, you know, then he doesn't get any of that money. I just hate it when these guys can't get so many of these rock bands. Tim, you and I have talked about it before, but they just can't see past all this dissension, and Stevie pisses off Lindsay or vice versa. It's happened 100 times. It doesn't matter. Boom, you're out of the band, and then, you know, the fans never get to see the Lindsay Buckingham, not
that.
In Fleetwood Mac, is not right to, even though he's not an original member, doesn't seem right.
I agree. And the interesting you say that, because apparently another thing that inspired this deal was Lindsay's sense of competition with Stevie. Stevie did a deal with the same company, Hypnosis. And apparently, so Lindsay comes along and says, I want to do the deal, but I want to do it for twice as much money. There's one other important factor here, and I know you always love running, we're always running up against the clock, but there's another important factor here. You can do these deals for money, but there's another sort of more spiritual aspect to this. Take Bob Dylan, for instance, who is the first really well-known artist to sell their 100% of their publishing. Bob Dylan didn't need the money. I think Bob Dylan did it to make his estate planning easier. When Tom Petty died, when Prince died, when Frank Zappa died, their estates, their families were torn up, were divided forever, fighting over the estate. Now, Bob Dylan says his publishing for $300 million. He then can go to his six children and say, hey, I'm splitting it up for you now. You know exactly what you're getting. You won't be fighting after I die. And I think Tom Petty, the fighting between Tom Petty's family, was a big inspiration for why Bob Dylan sold. And it could also be an inspiration for why Lindsay sold as well.
And by the way, Mick Fleetwood, just today, this is in Rolling Stone, he sold his to BMG. And we didn't mention this, but one of the reasons Fleetwood Mac songs always do well, but there was this big TikTok video that featured Dreams, and that really ramped it up. So there was more interest in that, and that was one of the reasons, I guess, Mick got involved here, too, selling like Stevie and Lindsey Buckingham. I don't know if there's a dollar figure attached to that.
I have not heard the dollar figure yet, but it raises an interesting point. One of the reasons that Hipgnosis and BMG and the other companies, because all my friends in publishing say, my God, these companies are overpaying dramatically. Most of my publishing friends think that they're probably paying double what these catalogs are actually worth at this time. Except in the future, who knows what future mediums may exist to exploit this material. For instance,
it's a hedge.
5 years ago, 5 years ago, who could have predicted TikTok? Yeah, TikTok probably made a fortune for Fleetwood Mac. So that's probably one of the reasons why they're overpaying.
Yeah, I mean, it's a risk like anything else, especially with a band like Fleetwood Mac. You're going to probably think there's less risk, especially because of the depth of that catalog. Let me just offer an example. I always find this interesting with bands that I like, and one example right now would be Chris Stapleton, who probably doesn't need money from advertisements, but he's got this new album, Starting Over, in the single, and I mean right away, and I can't remember, I should know what ad, it was used in an ad. I think of Fits in the Tantrums. They've had a bunch of their songs used. Arguably, some of these artists, and again, Stapleton might not be the best example because he fills arenas and really blew up a few years ago. But with some of these smarter artists, they're probably making a lot more money just on that one publishing deal than they are with anything else that they've done in their career. If they hit that one song and then MasterCard comes in or Apple or something and they say, we're going to use this in a campaign, that can be a big check.
Yeah, it will. And, you know, I asked this question to a couple of publishing friends recently. If you write that one song, how much money do you actually make? And the amount is, if it's that one song you hear everywhere, at every Target, in every CVS, in every Stop and Shop, if you write that one song, you're probably looking at a $5 to $10 million payday. So you're right. That one song can get you far. Now, country is a whole different thing because country always involves like five different co-writers. So that's a whole mess in and of itself. Yeah. And plus, as you pointed out at the beginning of this conversation, these artists no longer have their touring income. So they have to do a kind of a whole different mindset about how am I going to make money off of my music? And it means stuff like advertising and stuff like selling or publishing. You said you hit on it before. If Lindsey had a Fleetwood Mac reunion tour to look forward to in the summer of 2021, something he'd probably pocket $25 to $50 million off of. I mean, literally, in Lindsey's pocket, he could probably put $25 million. Just him, he could probably put $25 million in his pocket off of a Fleetwood Mac reunion tour, and that's real money. If Lindsey knew he could look forward to that sometime in 2021 or 2022, he probably wouldn't have done the sale. But everyone is revising their mindset because that touring income no longer exists. And really, maybe it'll be back in 2023. Maybe it'll be back in 2022. No one can be sure. The whole rules could be changed.
Yep, maybe not. Tim Sommer, always great to have you on. This was fun. I learned a little something here this afternoon, and we appreciate it very much. Tim Sommer with us this afternoon.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Audio cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. Lindsey Graham on impeachment.
If this becomes the norm, be careful what you wish for today. Under this theory, the radical left, if you can impeach a president after they're out of office, why don't we impeach George Washington? He owned slaves. Where does this stop? So to my Republican colleagues, let's stand firm for the idea, whether you like Donald Trump or not, he's not above the law. If he did something wrong, you know, he can face the consequences of the law. Impeachment is political. What we're doing here is we're impeaching the president without any evidence, without any witnesses, and we're going to have a trial after they're out of office. How do you survive as a president in the future? This will be an attack on the presidency in perpetuity.
I mean, emotionally, I would have voted to impeach. I was more of a fan of the 25th Amendment, but he does raise some interesting points. There are a lot of things happening, even with social media. Consequences down the line. That's your audio cut of the day. Total Information PM is coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.